is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Today, a conversation with State Senator Floyd Brzezinski. Floyd, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Kyle, thank you very much for having me.
I know it's been a busy day for you. Last hour, you had a special press availability about Measure 11 reform. I wasn't able to check in on that and get everything else put together for our noon report, but kind of go over Senate Bill 401 and what you're hoping to achieve in this session.
Yeah, Senate Bill 401 is basically a simple fix. It's an amendment to the current Measure 11. What it would do is it would return the sentencing decision back to the court, to the judge. This is based on our foundations of our criminal procedures that we've had and foundations of law in this state since statehood and actually before, where the judge is the individual that should be making that decision, not the district attorney as it pertains to mandatory minimum sentencing. That's what actually has happened. With the passage of that measure back in 1994, going into effect in 1995, we've seen over the last 26 years how it has been misused and basically has used as a tool for, instead of negotiating and getting some type of a bargain between the parties, you basically took the district attorney and put them in a position in the catbird seat where they could demand certain things to occur for any type of negotiations before they even started. And the judge, even though on a case-by-case basis, would say this is a case that shouldn't have a mandatory minimum sentence imposed or such, isn't able to do so because of the way the statute is written and how it does, in fact, impact that independent decision by a judge. So basically what this will do is very simple. It will just say instead of it being a mandatory minimum sentence, meaning that is what you will get just like for a first-time offender, and we understand about 60-plus percent of the people convicted under Measure 11 are first-time offenders, never have been in the system before, would get the exact same sentence under Measure 11 as a career criminal. And so it doesn't give for the flexibility and the ability to actually have individuals be judged by a judge and determine as to what is the most appropriate sentence for that person for the conduct they are involved in, as well as the situation with all parties, meaning the district attorney advocating for the state and the defense advocating for themselves or through their attorney as to what they think is the appropriate sentence. What you end up with is that you have a situation where it can be misused by the prosecutors. I'm a prosecutor for 33 years. When I ran for office in 1994 is when Measure 11 was before the voters, and I ran against Measure 11 because as a sitting deputy district attorney doing felony property crime work, I knew exactly how that was going to shift the power away from the court being independent, making the decision to the point of where you have some people within district attorney's offices that are actually using this as a power tool for control in negotiations. That is not what our system's built up on.
My recollection from that time when that came out is that there was a lot of pushback. A lot of people felt that folks could commit serious crimes and through some kind of plea deal end up with a very small sentence and felt like victims of crimes were not getting to see justice done, and thus the push for those mandatory minimums.
Well, we actually at that time already had sentencing guidelines in place, and that's how the crimes that are under Measure 11 were actually being dealt with. So it wasn't, quote-unquote, a plea negotiation scenario. They actually had some guidelines that the courts actually were using. Basically, for victims, clearly, this is something that needs to be held and accountable. As a victim myself, with my sister being murdered when I was in high school, I fully appreciate and understand those emotions and concerns that people have. But you have to also realize that not all victims have the same mindset. And we actually had a case that was given to us today by one of the sitting district attorneys, who's the district attorney for Deschutes County, John Hummel, talked about that he basically had a case that an individual had been involved in a scenario where it was a robbery in the sense of it was a furniture store. The young man basically went up and hit someone in the a person in the face, took a six pack of beer, and then dropped it. And I said the wrong DA. This is actually was Matt Ellis, was the person that was the defense counsel in that case. And the bottom line is that the victim in that case was asked, "What do you want to do?" And he says, "I don't want the guy to go to prison. I want him to get help." But when they went to the district attorney and expressed that, the district attorney said no, even though the only damage to that to the victim was a cut about an inch long on his nose or on his face. Again, the victim saying, "Do not put this person in prison." He went to prison because the district attorney had the exclusive decision making there. So they didn't honor what the what the victim wanted in that case. So this guy gets back to a balance. It allows for the court to hear from the defense as well as from the prosecutor and the victims, and then make a decision as to what is the most appropriate sentence. But understand that all this does is saying, instead of saying you will and shall get this as a sentence, this is the baseline. This is the guideline that what you will be getting unless the court determines that you should get a longer sentence or a shorter sentence. So it's presumed that you'll get the sentence that you would get right now as a mandatory minimum, but there's flexibility and discretion for the court to make the appropriate sentence on a case-by-case basis.
Now, in your presentation last hour, you were joined by folks from different organizations. Talk about their thoughts about this idea.
Well, we basically had, this morning, we had panelists that were three district attorneys that are actually sitting district attorneys right now that were supportive of the bill. We had two retired judges that spoke in favor of the bill, one of them being Daryl Larson, who was both of them are senior judges, retired, and he was in Lane County. Started his career as a prosecutor in Lane County DA's office for 17 or 18 years. Half of his legal practice was as a prosecutor. Then went on to the bench and was actually seeing how things actually evolved through this process after Measure 11 was passed, and took away his discretion. And he thinks that this really is a power play for the prosecutors. And again, here's a person that served as a prosecutor in Lane County for 18 years before he went on the bench. And so we had a testimony from them. We had a testimony also from a group that represents victims and survivors, and wanting to make certain that, again, that there's flexibility in the system. Everyone understands that there's a need to hold people accountable, and I'm the first to say that. But the reality, you need to let the judge make the decision as to what is the most appropriate sentence for this particular person, this particular crime. And at the same time, when we know that people are going away for, let's say, 70 months, if they have no hope of making any changes, modifications in their to get any benefit for changing their behavior, we heard from a line officer that their safety in the corrections facilities are at risk because these individuals coming in have nothing to lose, and usually they want to try to make a name for themselves, so they'll hit on, beat up or try to have a fight with corrections officers. So this is one of those situations that you build in the incentive, just like we want everyone to act good. You do well out in the community, you get a raise at your job, or you potentially get a promotion. So by setting up standards for individuals that are in custody and saying, you do good, you work in these programs, you will get some of your time cut off based on your performance and doing well, when they come out, they've actually have been gone through a behavior modification based on incentive basis, and they're actually, I think, more geared to actually fit back in society as to how we want them to operate. And we don't have recidivism, meaning having them continue to be in a life of crime, causing more victims to suffer.
You have mentioned some of the folks involved that are supportive. What about overall? What have you heard from law enforcement and parts of the judicial community?
Well, like I said, I mean, you're going to have mixed decisions from different people who you talk to within any of those occupations or institutions. What we do know is there's support as well as opposition to 401 from all sectors. And so it's not really one that you can say everyone in one particular institution, such as line officers, as compared to judges. I think the judges are probably more so inclined to say that we should be more in that process But then, of course, prosecutors, they have nothing to lose. In fact, they have everything to gain by maintaining the status quo for the last 25 years because they're in a power position. They can actually control all of the situations. And here's some of the stuff that's happened. We've actually had prosecutors say, okay, I'll cut a deal with you, but you got to, one, give up your right to any appeal. Two, you're not going to be able to participate in any reformation program, so you can't get reformed while you're in prison. And, oh, by the way, even though I'm going to let you plead to a charge that would have a 70-month sentence if you were committed that crime by your, on your own and not being negotiated down, I'm going to require you to do 90 months instead of 70 months. You know, that's the issues that are faced with, is that you have individual decisions at the power position to say, you know, if you don't take my deal, and one of the people call it fear negotiation, we're going to basically go for the maximum, and you're going to be put away for multiple years beyond what my deal is, even though it's longer than what you'd get if you committed that crime out and were charged on that particular crime. So this is the type of stuff I've heard from judges that is wrong. I agree as a prosecutor, it is wrong, and we need to let judges make these decisions with input from the victims, from the state, meaning the prosecutor, as well as the defendant, and then have the judge make the best decision they have at that time.
State Senator Floyd Prusansky, more when we come back. The interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com. Some other topics to cover when we return. 1247 at News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248, Lars Larson at 1. On tomorrow's program, Nick Marshall from the Oregon National Guard will be in a special event happening tomorrow night. We'll tell you about that. State Senator Floyd Prusansky in with us now. Let's switch gears and talk about some other things involving legislators. Floyd, I'm curious, the House floor sessions have been paused for several days due to COVID-19 issues. Any impact on those of you in the Senate?
Yeah, let me give you that thing. I do want to finish one other thing that I think is important on the topic we just talked about, 401. And that's basically that the District Attorneys Association in December asked voters whether they wanted the judge to have this discretion to have sentencing. And their own poll showed 58% of Oregonians supported judges having discretion at sentencing and not having a mandatory minimum sentence imposed. All right, regarding what happened regarding yesterday, we got word from the Capitol that someone who had time on the House floor last week on the 15th and 16th while they were holding their marathon sessions was tested positive for COVID. So that has shifted the framework as to how the House of Representatives is able to conduct business, which they're not. They basically have shut down the chamber for the House for a 10-day period. All of the members who were required were suggested to go home or go back and quarantine and to get tests done to see whether or not they in themselves have come down with any symptoms or if they test positive. So that is what's happening with the House. The Senate, on the other hand, because we've been meeting on different days from the House, they have been meeting up until this week, Mondays and Tuesdays, where we have been meeting on Wednesdays and Thursdays. It has been cleared for us to continue to do our work on the Senate side. And so as of right now, we are scheduled to be on the floor tomorrow for our conducting our regular floor session for Wednesday, and we will continue to do our floor session for Thursday. One of the issues that happened on the House side is because they are now requiring the bills to be read in its full because the minority party, the Republicans, are trying to delay everything. I understand that the process, but they were on the floor for close to 10 hours last week on one of the days, and you can only imagine having close proximity for 10 hours in an enclosed area and people routinely not wearing masks. On the floor, they are wearing masks. I want to acknowledge that. But you do, in fact, have people that are at much higher risk that are associated with others. And apparently one of the members is what is assumed because they said a person who has been on the floor of the Senate, of the House, excuse me, had been tested positive. So do not know who that individual is, not that we need to know, but the bottom line is that we have half of the legislature now shut down for 10 days because I would submit to you safeguards were not taken both in and out of the building to give a less risk to exposure.
Talk about some of the help that's coming from the federal level that's being distributed by the state.
It's pretty amazing as to what's coming through this American Relief Act. My understanding from the numbers I saw, we have somewhere in the range of about five plus billion, that's with the B, money coming into the state. That is a combination of money that's going to be going directly to government units. I understand that the Oregon is going to, the state of Oregon is going to receive close to $2.6 billion. Cities and counties are going to receive another set of money. I don't have that number in front of me. And then school districts, schools, as well as I guess some other transportation needs, et cetera, are also receiving money. But the state as a whole, when you take all of the cumulative money that's going to be coming in, is going to be over $5 billion. So, of course, that will help give a shot in the arm because a lot of that money is going directly to individuals such as you and me and other individuals to basically have and have use to make ends meet. And we're also going to see, I hope that we'll see a process of using some of those funds to take care of some of the ongoing needs of the state. And at the same time, we have to keep in mind that the biennium for this coming up 21-23 as well as 23-25 forecast is not the best. So you don't want to take all the money and spend it. You want to invest it wisely and then at the same time ensure that we are helping businesses to maintain being open, that people are able to pay their bills, and that we can actually get everyone back to more of a normality, shorter than longer. And that's going to be how do we continue to deal with the safeguarding for the spread of COVID, because it's not over yet. Even though we're getting vaccines in people, we still have to take precautions.
How is the formulation of the new state budget coming along with all these obstacles?
Well, it's slow. I'm not on. I'm on the subcommittee for Ways and Means, but I'm not on the full Ways and Means. And we have two co-chairs on the Senate side and one co-chair on the House side. So they're called the tri-chairs. They have been working diligently from all the reports they're getting, and they're trying to figure out what are going to be the restrictions on the money that's coming into the state, how it can in fact be used, and how can we actually ensure that we take care of not only the needs for this next biennium, but making certain that we're positioned to take care of the needs in the future.
And what are you hearing when it comes to the business side of things, the business community? What are you hearing from business people in Douglas and Lane counties about how they've been impacted over the past year?
Well, you know, that's the sad part is with the scaling that we have as to having the metrics to determine exactly where everyone is at any given time. You know, Lane County right now is on the, I'm going to call the downswing as to risk or down. We're in the moderate. We're seeing much more activity business-wise opening up. The service industry specifically, I have the opportunity to get out and just kind of just look around outside in the community and see a lot of activity. You know, Douglas County, unfortunately, is still having difficulties and issues without and its metrics. But the whole point for anyone, no matter where we are currently at, you could be in a great position, but if you start relaxing your safeguards, as we've seen, you know, for Douglas and others, you basically can be pushed back into a higher risk and have more limitations imposed again. So to me, the thing is, it's great that we're, again, getting more vaccine than people, and people hopefully are going to continue to take the safeguards that we've taken, washing your hands, social distancing, wear a mask. Even if you're getting your inoculation and getting the vaccine in you, you still should be thinking about the need to protect those around you and ensure at this point that we don't have any unsurprised, I guess, outbreaks or spreading through even someone that could potentially be a carrier.
Earlier in the hour, we announced Douglas County going from extreme risk down to high on Friday. Some of the metrics changes announced. So that word for the businesses in this county. For all the work that you're doing, we've got about a minute left in the coming days. Talk about some of the committee work you're involved in the next few days.
Well, judiciary is doing a lot of work right now that we're trying to do at all the committees, because we got deadlines that we just passed for posting at this last Friday. And land use, we're doing, or I should say natural resource, we're looking at land use issues, trying to help individuals with housing, and also trying to deal with all the ramifications from the fires. So that's where a lot of my focus has been, on natural resources around the wildfires, and in trying to ensure that we can help individuals get back on their feet, be able to do their rebuilding where they have been before, and be able to get back to whatever the normal is going to be in the future.
Are you concerned that this pausing of some of the activity of the House is going to have an adverse effect on your timeline for your chamber and for the legislature overall?
At this point, yes. We don't know exactly how that's going to be played out by the leadership, whether there's going to be some type of extended deadlines, but we can't go beyond the deadline of when the session has to close. So we are pinched in, and it could have a direct impact.
All right, State Senator Floyd Przanski out of time. Thanks for being on today.
Kyle, thank you very much. Have a good afternoon.
1258, News Radio 1240, KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team, News Radio 1240 KQEN.